This is a Conservative Party State Chairman Jerry Kassar, and this is Patriots Podium, a regular podcast of the New York State Conservative Party. Today, we are joined by Mike Saproconi, the Conservative and Republican Party candidate for U.S. Senate versus Kirsten Gillibrand. Mike hails from Richmond Hills, Queens, and has lived in Nassau County for many years. Mike's the father of five adult children and the grandfather of five. A retired first grade New York City detective, Mike founded and operated two large security companies, one domestic and one international, that among its many missions, handle the security logistics for the movement of high-tech products. The two companies employed hundreds of individuals, including many former law enforcement members. Along the way, Mike headed a Nassau County school board district while becoming immersed in youth sports. Mike received 85% of the weighted vote at the Republican convention in Binghamton about 2 weeks ago, and he was really the unanimous choice of the Conservative Party, receiving the backing at our convention about a week and a half ago. Mike enjoys the endorsement and complete support of former President Trump. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Well, thank you, Chairman. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to see you. I've traveled a little bit with you, and I've certainly had an opportunity to discuss a lot of political and issue items with you. So I'm very confident the party made the right choice, and I'm so glad to see you on our show. Now, let me ask you this, Mike. You really have been an active supporter of GOP and conservative causes around the state for many years, but running for U.S. Senate is a whole new undertaking. Could you tell our audience about your motivation to run for U.S. Senate?
Well, you know, I sold my business, as you said, and I'm retired from the New York City Police Department. And I'm really excited about, I've always given back to my constituents and to my friends and my neighbors. And I think this is a great opportunity for me to give back the resources that I have to the state, my ability as a business person, my ability as a law enforcement person. It is a big undertaking. I dabbled a little bit in District 3 out in Long Island. So this is a big deal. 62 counties is a long way to go, but I've already been on the trail a little bit, and I'm meeting people, and I'm energized, and I'm looking forward to this. And I just think timing is so important in everything we do in life, Chairman. And I think the timing is right now. You look at the situations over the last 3 or 4 years with the red wave in Long Island and what we're trying to do everywhere else in the state, and the great opportunity that Congressman Zeldin brought to us 2 years ago running for governor. We're really in a good place. And I think I add to that now, and I think I can build off of what the congressman did, and then certainly build off of as the president is moving forward right now. So I just think timing is good, opportunity is right, and she's certainly beatable.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Well, let me just say this, and this goes into your point about beatable. In downstate New York, you're about as likely to see a dinosaur before you have a Gillibrand sighting. What's her problem?
Well, you know, I talk a lot of cop stuff, Chairman, and so one of the comparisons I use, if you put her in a lineup, who picks her out, right? Most people in this state, most regular people in this state, most constituents, most working people like myself wouldn't even be able to pick her out. You know, she started out as a kind of a middle of the road kind of congresswoman back in the early 2007. And then when Patterson appointed her in 2009, she's quickly moved more left and more left and more left. And then after 2020, when she ran for president, we haven't even heard from her or seen her. Though I've noticed the last few days, she's been popping up here or there, but I guess it's about time she starts popping up.
No question about that. Let's talk about some issues that I think might be of interest to the conservative audience that would be watching this podcast. Second Amendment. Where are you on the Second Amendment?
Well, you know, we certainly have that given right through our Constitution to keep and bear arms. And that's our right. And I will never allow anybody to take that away from us. That's important. That's what we've earned. That's what we've been given by our forefathers in the Constitution. I'm 100% behind the Second Amendment.
Well, thank you. Now, from a federal perspective, abortion has now moved back into the states because of Roe versus Wade. But there are still some federal aspects of it, which really involves international funding, some money that goes into the military. Where were you on Roe versus Wade?
Well, I think it's fine that the states now have this. I think that's perfectly okay. I think it's a state issue. I know that Gillibrand has very much gotten involved with the military and abortions. You have to look at the Hyde Amendment, I think. And if you think about that a little bit and you see, we shouldn't be paying for people to have abortions. It's as simple as that. That shouldn't be coming out of our tax dollars and out of our health benefits or anything else. I'm very strong on that. I think that's very important that we maintain that.
So, and I guess what you're saying, Roe versus Wade obviously sent abortion back to the states. So what happened there, you would be in agreement with sending the issue back to the states.
I agree. I think that's where the issue belongs, and I think we should keep it there.
Well, thank you. Thank you on that. So, and when we went downstate New York, when I'm saying downstate New York, I'm talking Long Island, I'm talking the city, I'm talking Westchester, Rockland, Putnam, maybe even Dutchess, and of course, parts of New Jersey. I mean, we're about to get hit with this congestion pricing. Now, I think as much as the state doesn't want to admit that it's a federal aspect to this, talk to us a little bit about congestion pricing and what you think you might be able to do to stop this atrocity.
Well, as a downstate person and actually a city person, as I grew up in Queens. I mean, look at Staten Island, for instance. First of all, Staten Island is paying to go over the Verrazano Bridge to come into the city. And I know, Chairman, you're a city person yourself. So when we talk about the city, we talk about Manhattan a lot of times, right?
Right.
And they're paying to go into Manhattan just to get to work every day. And now we're going to hit them with congestion pricing. And the MTA has, as far as I'm concerned, they've never been fiscally responsible. We never know exactly where that money goes or what's it being used for. But I think the governor came out yesterday, or she's coming out this morning, to say, listen, I'm going to pump more money into subway crime, okay, because subways are unsafe. But you're telling us, let's do congestion pricing. Let's everybody jump on the subway and take the subways. Now you're telling us, well, wait, we're going to take the subways, but they're not safe to take. It makes no sense to me. I don't understand it. As a transit cop for 15 years patrolling the subways in all these boroughs and the bus system out in Staten Island, we know it's not safe. And we're not where we were in the late 80s and early 90s yet, but we're getting there. And if we don't start to do something soon, we're going to have a big problem like we did back in the 80s and 90s. A concern to me is somebody from the MTA made a statement saying, oh, what's the big deal? It's like having an extra glass of wine for $15 at dinner. Well, I don't know about him, but I know a lot of people I grew up with or the people I work with can't just afford to sit down and spend $15 on a glass of wine. It's a big deal. You know, we're not looking at a lot of exemptions. I know they're still working through that. But what about the people who have to fire them, the cops, the first responders who have to get to work? Now we're going to charge them more money. And they're not making a lot of money in the first place. I mean, when you look at what a cop and a fireman and a nurse and these first responders make, it's not a lot of money. So I think this is ridiculous. We lose $600,000 a day, Chairman, on people jumping over the turnstiles. Okay. We should be enforcing those laws. We should be collecting that revenue and not worry about adding extra $15 to congestion pricing.
Well, I mean, people like myself who like to go in occasionally and see a show, go into the city with my wife, maybe to a museum, catch a little dinner. I mean, we're middle class people. Just to your point, it's difficult. But let me just say this to you: as much as the state wants to make it seem in the MTA like there's no hope to stop this, I sincerely believe if we take back the U.S. Senate with a Republican president like Trump, we can stop this in its tracks. A victory by you over Gillibrand guarantees Republican and conservative control over the U.S. Senate. And that, in turn, could very much guarantee that congestion pricing gets stopped in its tracks. So, I
don't disagree with you, but my concern here is they're putting this into effect in May. Okay?
Right.
We're not going to be able to overturn anything until January, right? You know, we'll win in November, but by January, I'm not that familiar with how we will have that ability to stop this. How long?
It's the funding. It's the funding. There's a piece of this that still involves federal funding, despite the fact an environmental impact, despite the fact that they want to talk about all the money it raises. And, you know, a minute ago you were talking about the two things. She announced 750 National Guard troops were being activated to go into the subways. Now, in all due respect to the National Guard, which I have the highest opinion of, that's a law enforcement role to be in those subways. That's not a National Guard role. And she's finally admitting something we all knew. I mean, I've got a subway station on the corner. I, for most of my life, have taken that train into the city. But I don't want to take that train anymore into the city. I want to drive in because it does. I do think I don't want to get on that subway. So I'm just saying to you that there's where the people are, exclusive of the Manhattan liberals, and where you know where the government is. And congestion pricing is not a popular thing in my world.
No, and I agree with you. And we have to do something. And there is, we should take federal steps. We should stop the funding. And, you know, there's so many different things we can do. And I think a lot of people don't understand it, as I'm understanding. We have more. We have so much power in the federal government. We can say to the states, hey, stop this. Enough right. is enough now. We're not, you know, even you go, and I'm not trying to go in a different direction, but you look at some of the colleges with their mm-hmm. liberal ways of doing things. We should stop funding some of these colleges. We should put our foot down. And we don't do that because we just live like, que sera, sera. This is the way it is, and it's okay. It's not okay. We need to step up and be supportive of each other, okay, and to make things work better. We got to stop the chaos. And if you look at the chaos that's been going on here in the last three and a half years since the Biden administration came in and the Trump administration left, it's pathetic. It's scary. We're in a situation where this world is a scary place, and it's going to get worse.
Well, you did bring up the colleges, and I think that's a very important issue because we have seen so much wonkish left-wing movement there that is now, you know, translating also into some heavy-duty anti-Semitism on the college campuses. And that is definitely a federal issue because there is a lot of federal aid that goes into these colleges. So I appreciate the fact that you've, you know, signaled to us where you are on that issue. Thank you on that. Let me ask you this. What do you consider the biggest overseas threat facing the United States?
Our own weakness. I think our own weakness is the biggest problem. You look at Ukraine, you look at Israel, concerning with Taiwan, with China. I think these leaders find us as weak. Okay. They over the last 3.5 years, they find us as weak, and they take an opportunity. When we give them the opportunity, they would be fools not to take advantage of it. And I think that's what we're doing right now. I think we need to strengthen not just our borders, and that we'll talk a little bit about that. That's important. But we need to strengthen the way we deal with terrorists and bullies in meaning countries. Okay. We need to do something about that. And we haven't done that. We lay back. We're wishy-washy in what we do. We need to take a strong stance. And I don't think the Biden administration has taken a small stance since they moved out of Afghanistan. It's just all been downhill for us.
So, man, you know, this brings up an interesting point. You have an enormous. I know we talk about your role as a very well-decorated New York City police detective. But these security companies that you have founded and put together, one operating internationally and one domestically, you must have a lot of personal experience with overseas security issues, which would clearly move into other questions relating to terrorism and illicit activity. So would you mind just to the degree you can discuss some of this, maybe give us a little more insight on your international knowledge?
Sure. Well, I mean, in our business in Europe, they take a whole different look at security. They take it seriously compared to what we take it. And let's shoot back to 9/11. Okay, that's right when my company was starting to grow. And after the bombings at the World Trade Center, we took over the American Stock Exchange. And we put took unarmed officers out of there, and we put retired and active police officers in there. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem with our country, the way we look at security, is at some point we say, well, hey, nothing's happened in the last year or two. So we don't need to, and I'm talking strictly as a business person now, we don't need to keep security because we're spending $1 million or $2 million or $500,000. Nothing's happening. So we should get rid of security and we're all going to be okay. But the reason nothing's happening is because we're strong with security and we stay that course. As soon as you take that away, you have problems again. And the bad guys, the actors, they look for these opportunities. And that's just the way it is in the international world. In Europe, they steadfast with security. They believe in it. It's a big part of their life. You know, we have this freedom, this great freedom here in America, and we're used to that. And after 9/11, we saw a change in our world and the way we do things. But in Europe, they've always been that way. They've been strong and steadfast with security and enforcing that. And we get lackadaisical. And that's where we stand right now. When you look at the border, how lackadaisical we've become, and in everything we do. So internationally, most countries stand very strong with security. I think here we don't take it as seriously as we need to take it.
Well, that does bring up the border security issue, or really the lack of. Where do you place our poorest borders in relationship to our nation's economy and international security?
Well, you know, I always look, Chairman, and we always talk about the southern border. But as I've traveled New York State for the last 3-4 weeks, people are telling me there's a young lady up in Clinton County whose parents moved from Brooklyn years and years ago so they could see the stars. Now, you might not agree with that. I think you see the stars every once in a while, too. But moved up to Clinton County so they could see the stars at night. And now she says all she sees are helicopters every night. OK, the lights of helicopters chasing people across the border and trying to chase them back. So it's not just a southern border issue, especially in our great state. We have such a huge border, you know, on the northern border with Canada. And that's increased over 200% in the last year, the migrants coming into Canada. So it's a domino effect. When you look at these people coming in, I think last year only 150 people were caught on the terrorist watch list. Now, that's people we stopped, okay? What about the tens and hundreds of thousands of people who have come in that we never even got an opportunity to talk to or to check out or to vet? So we have young men and women of young ages coming into this country, and we don't know anything about them. We don't necessarily know where they're from. And then you look at the crime with fentanyl, the drug situation. So fentanyl right now is the number one killer in this country between the ages of 18 and 45. And this is pouring in, not just from Mexico, but from China, from Venezuela, and from any place else you could think about. So we need to take a strong stance. We have no plan. So somebody will say, like, well, what's plan B? Well, there's no plan A here. We never had a plan A. Since the Biden administration took over, there was no plan A. Excuse me. But we need to strengthen our border. We need to not defund our law enforcement and our border patrol. We need to give them the tools they need to do the job. We need to increase our judges so that we can stop people just saying it. There was a time when you said, I'm here for asylum, you had to prove it. Now right. It's you just walk in here and you wait your turn 5 or 6 years. And then by that time, you've disappeared somewhere else. Or have been, you know, went back, committed your crimes, did whatever you did and went back. So we need to strengthen those things. We need to work together to do this. I mean, it's such a domino effect. And it's not immigration. We're all immigrants at some time. It's the migration. And what about the immigrants who have come here the legal way and the right way? How is this to them? How do they feel that what they had to go through, and now these people just walk in? We're paying for their medical. We're paying for their food. We're paying for their room. We're paying for their education. It's not fair. I mean, we have veterans sleeping on the streets. We have homeless people. We can't afford to take care of them. Yet we're paying for migrants to come into our country.
Well, thank you on that. But so let's talk about a little bit about your campaign. You know, you're a Republican conservative candidate. You're strongly supported by President Trump, who issued an immensely powerful statement recently on his support for you. Do you have a team in place? I mean, and how can you be reached?
We certainly have a team in place. We were lucky enough that we had put a team in place last year when we looked at the congressional team. So it's Mike Sapricone for Senate.com. We're out there. You can find us on the websites, any place you look. If you put Mike Sapricone in, you should find me somewhere or another. It'll tell you about me being a security expert, running for Congress, and being a candidate for the U.S. Senate. So we're pretty easy to find. And as we travel the state, we're making it easier to find us.
Well, I want to tell you this. A couple of years back on a campaign I was assisting on, I remember asking a voter, well, you chose the right candidate as far as I'm concerned. What made you do that? And the person said to me, well, they'll be quiet. This is when they used to use the old machines and they had the curtains behind you. Said, well, you know what? By the time this election day rolled around, I felt like that candidate was actually standing behind me when I went in and voted, and I wasn't going to disappoint anybody. And that's the attitude. The attitude is that people need to believe you are standing behind them when they go to vote because they've seen and heard from you so much. But let me just say this, and you sound like a great candidate, and that's why I think my party chose you so overwhelmingly. But these campaigns are expensive, and you're going to need to come to terms with the great expense of a statewide campaign, or else you could, you know, win their hearts and never their feet, as the expression goes, to vote. What are your thoughts on putting a budget together to take Gillibrand on?
Well, we're starting to put a budget together. We were successful in raising a little bit of money last year. We think we have that ability. We're hoping, you know, I have a dream, and my dream is 62 counties. Okay. Right. I'd love to see each county, and I may have said this to you in passing before, I'd love to see each of those counties throwing $50,000, and that gives us a nice handle to start with. But I know that's not realistic. There's probably some counties haven't given $50,000 in 20 years. And there are other counties who give more. So we're going to work hard to visit these counties and start talking to the people, the constituents in these counties, and making our showing them how we have the issues on our side and how we care. I think, you know, that goes back to what you just said, Chairman, about people feeling like you're standing behind them in the voter's box. I think people need to feel that you care. And, you know, we stand strong as conservatives and as Republicans, but this isn't just a conservative or Republican issue. This is an American issue. We need to have the independents and the Democrats understand that they have the same issues we have. We have the answers to those issues, and they need to step up also and vote. So I think that's important. I think we'll see some federal money, I'm hoping, here. As you said earlier on, you know, when I win this seat, we turn the Senate. Now, there's going to be other states out there working hard to do that, too. And the way it looks is we could wind up with 2 or 3 majority in the Senate. Of course, we want to turn the House and keep the House. And I think we will keep the House. I think this redistricting has thrown a little slap foo into things, but I think we're going to be fine here. I think we're going to work hard. And what's so important to me, at the top of the ticket in New York State, I want to help our candidates. I want to be out there and not just help myself and get to meet people, but I want to make our candidates stronger. I want to show our conservative ways of life, our Republican ways of life. I want to show our common sense ways. And I think I have that ability to help the downstate and the upstate candidates, and I'm looking forward to doing it.
Well, I know you have been traveling around. You and I did some traveling together, and I know you were up in Erie recently. Actually, you were doing a kind of a swing around. Yep. So, I mean, I know you've been meeting political leaders, civic leaders, governmental leaders. It's been going good?
It's been going great. But, I mean, that's easy stuff, okay? Yeah. Those are guys who are on my side, okay? Those are people who are – they backed me, like you said, 85% and almost 100% with you guys. What I have to get to, and we're starting to get to, is the people, the guys like me who grew up and worked in the blue collar and the hardworking people, and explain to them what we need to do and how we can make this a better state. I really care about this state. I'm a local kid. This is important to me. Upstate is really important to me. I'm learning so much about that. But I think something I want to see, and this is another little bit of me maybe being optimistic. I'm a city kid. We need, you know, Lee Zeldin performed well in the city, but not enough. And me being a city kid, I've got to go in there and hit them hard. I worked really hard to protect New Yorkers for 20 years. I need to show that in the 5 boroughs, what the city means and the state means to me. We need to get a great portion higher than 33% of the 5 boroughs. And I think we will, because I think people understand, people appreciate people who work hard and who care. Yeah. Certainly will work hard. It's an honor. It's just an honor to be the candidate from the Conservative Republican Party. And a bigger honor is when I went to bed Saturday evening and I got woken up in the middle of the night, say that President Trump endorsed me. Listen, I'm a kid from Queens. He's a kid from Queens. That's a big deal to me. Okay. That endorsement was a big deal. And so I'm happy about that. And I think we're on the right path.
Well, do you have any final thoughts for our audience, Mike?
Just vet the candidates, find out about me, reach out, talk to me. I learned when I was a school board president, Chairman, in Seaford, Long Island. I like to talk. You saw that for the last 20 minutes or so here. But I do like to listen, too. And I think listening is important. And I want to listen to the voters, the constituents. I want to learn what their issues are. We can't solve every problem, but we can certainly start to put little things together and start to move in that right direction together. So vote. That's a big deal. You know, I don't think we, and maybe not everybody agrees with me, but I think we're old fashioned in our steps and way I am, you know, my age. I think election day is election day, and that's the day you vote. But we need to do better than that. We've always been good at turning the vote out, But I think nowadays we need to get out there and vote early. We need to put in those absentee ballots. We need to turn those people out that way, just as well as us going boots on the ground. So I'm excited. Please reach out, Mike Sapricone for Senate.com. Talk to me, ask me questions, invite me places, because I'm going to be everywhere I possibly can, sir.
Well, I think New Yorkers would do well to have you walking a beat for them in the U.S. Senate. Just the way, you know, that's the way I see it. I think it's appropriate to say thank you for your service. And I do want to thank you for being here with us. I mean, the party fully supports you. We hope to deliver you many hundreds of thousands of votes. We'll be with you throughout the campaign. I frankly enjoy campaigning with you. And I just think you have that sort of spirit and focus that can be very valuable to New Yorkers. And let me just say this. Gillibrand is actually an awful U.S. senator. I mean, we as Republicans and conservatives could come to many reasons why we want to see her out. But I'm going to just add the additional one in. No matter what your philosophy is in New York, and you were talking about hard work, that's the thing she actually lacks as a core value. She doesn't work that hard at it. And part of it's probably because she just was just as happy to let Schumer, do his job. And he, of course, is doing an awful job when it comes to border security and other issues in the state. So I wish you luck. I wish you luck. And it is Mike Sapricone for Senate. No, it's Mike Sapricone for Senate.com. I want to once again thank Andrew and Katie who make this podcast happen. And once again, this is Patriots Podium, and I'm State Chairman Jerry Kassar. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you.